On this episode of Listening, you'll hear about the meaning of Garth Brooks. You'll eavesdrop on a conversation with Texan singer Lara Lynn, and you'll get familiar with the voice and music of innovative Dallas rapper Lord Byron. Today's theme is individuality. Enjoy.
This is Listening, a music-minded podcast for the Dallas Morning News. I'm your host, Hunter Hawk. You probably know exactly what and whom you're hearing behind me, but just in case, it's 1990's The Thunder Rolls, a monster hit by the country phenom Garth Brooks. Brooks, one of the best-selling musical artists of all time, will arrive at American Airlines Center starting Thursday for 7 shows spanning 6 days. The shows are part of his first world tour in 17 years. The demand was so unprecedented in Dallas that more than 100,000 tickets were sold in just a few hours. Even if you don't care about the 53-year-old entertainer or his live concert bonanza, you can probably still sing along to the shout-filled honky-tonk chorus of Friends in Low Places, right? That's to this day the most universal identifier of Brooks's presence in culture at large. But look closer at his more than 2 decades of work, and there's no surprise as to why the streets around AAC will likely be chaotic, drawing a diverse mix of not just country fans. Brooks was already on the rise in the summer of 1990 when he landed in my East Texas hometown of Jacksonville to play for 4,000 folks at the Topsin, Texas Rodeo. He'd gone gold with his self-titled 1989 debut album, a collection of mostly Western swing honoring traditional country tunes, and he was riding high on its singles If Tomorrow Never Comes and The Dance. But the small-town rodeo fans who took in Brooks's performance that July evening and enjoyed his company as he signed autographs until the wee hours of the morning were among the last to see him before everything went to the next level. The following month, he unveiled Friends in Low Places, that raucous barroom kiss-off tune that established his household name. That song led the charge for the sophomore album No Fences, whose diversity and scope cemented his crossover status. Brooks could master much more than a drinking song or a down-home love tune. He could simmer with quiet vocal defiance or melt a heart with a folk ballad. Just 1 year later, in September of 91, Brooks sold out 2 nights at Dallas's Reunion Arena. The shows were filmed for his first National Network TV special, and he hit new critical heights with a 3rd album released around the same time, Rope in the Wind. And with 2 more career-defining LPs to come, The Chase and In Pieces, Brooks roared back here to Texas Stadium in 1993. He played for more than 60,000 and filmed his 2nd TV special. From high school football games to crowded bars, in arenas filled with both twangy traditionalists and pop radio listeners, Brooks captured the musical attention of the nation in a way that had only been done by the biggies before him, Michael Jackson, Madonna, Elvis, The Beatles. And as his sales and popularity ballooned over the next several years, his records in total eventually outsold those of everyone except the Fab Four. So how did this hat-wearing Oklahoman enter such rarefied cultural air in such a short time? There's no definitive answer, but considering both the material and its delivery, it's probably a mixture of unlimited creative ambition and business-obsessed shrewdness. As audiences of Brooks' more recent Las Vegas residency now know, the singer never intended to stay in one musical lane. He brings together elements of the artist who spoke to his heart as a kid, the true stories and twang of classic Haggard and Jones, the fiery 1970s rock moves of everyone from Bob Seger to Kiss, and the crooning of James Taylor, and the dramatic piano pop of Billy Joel, who he covered later in Shameless. Oh, maybe that's what's left of me. Don't have very far fall. You know now I'm not a man who's ever been insecure about the and yeah, world. Brooks's influence stew ticked off more than a few country diehards who saw the hat and felt both confusion and the urge to cry blasphemy. But for every one of those that he lost, he gained 10 more who'd never intended to listen to a country artist in the first place. Like any self-respecting pop star, Brooks poured as much energy and risk into the visuals that accompanied his sounds. We can easily call to mind the menacing rain-soaked singer in the video for The Thunder Rolls, the stage-climbing and guitar-crashing antics of his live specials, or even the wild patterns of the button-up shirts he wore on his album covers. His strongest legacy might be in opening up other country artists to bigger, bolder arena ambitions. Shortly after he hit, Shania Twain came along and set a few sales and showmanship benchmarks of her own. Today's top country acts all seem to look at Brooks and Twain as templates, at least where live tours are concerned. Jason Aldean and Kenny Chesney command stadiums on the regular. Florida Georgia Line plays around with pyro. And Miranda Lambert struts around stages like a rock goddess. Lambert told us earlier this year that Brooks's Texas Stadium concerts in 1993 were her first as a fan. She was 10 years old. Of course, even the biggest and brightest stars make missteps. Brooks's decidedly non-country 1999 album under an alter ego named Chris Gaines fell completely flat and became a never-ending joke about artistic risk. But it wasn't the Gaines project that ultimately brought Brooks's trajectory to a halt. He chose to slam on the brakes himself in 2001 when, along with the Eighth Proper album Scarecrow, he announced a retirement from performing. He wanted to be closer to his three daughters during their coming-of-age years. Brooks honored that promise to his family, which expanded to include new wife Trisha Yearwood in 2005. Aside from concert events here and there, the regular performances didn't come back for the star until 2009, when he began a three-year residency at the Wynn in Las Vegas. That was a more intimate show than Brooks had ever given fans, featuring him without a band and plenty of insightful banter. He revealed himself again as both a musical force and a motivational figure. The Vegas run served to prime the pump for the inevitable Garth touring comeback. Once that was done and all of his girls were entering adulthood, Brooks felt comfortable returning to the big-budget arena country road. And so began Garth's latest act. His first new album in 14 years, Man Against Machine, went platinum last year, and his world tour took over towns all over the place. Black is cold, it's like I'm chained to a midnight train pass through all night. It's finally Dallas's turn to invite the entertainer back. 7 times over 6 days, a couple of doubleheaders included. And he's a couple of decades older than the first time he sold out multiple shows in the Big D. But no one seems to worry much about whether he can reclaim the energy and greatness that defined his stage-owning days in the 90s. After all, this is far from Garth's first rodeo. It's a dust and mud, it's a roar of a Sunday crowd. It's wide in his knuckles, the gold in the buckle, he'll win the next go-round. It's boots and chaps, it's cowboy hats, it's spurs and Garth Brooks comes to American Airlines Center from September 17th through the 22nd. Read much more about his greatest songs and look for reviews of the concerts at guidelive.com/music. On to an artist not quite as well known as Garth Brooks, but she's already made a solid mark on listeners. Houston-born songstress Lara Lynn had a couple of solid folk rock records out before she ended up connecting with Texas super producer T-Bone Burnett last year to make some music for the second season of the HBO noir drama True Detective. Series creator Nick Pizzolatto was so taken with the songs that came from those sessions that he brought Lynn in to be a character on the show. She stole plenty of scenes as the depressed-looking and sounding chanteuse performing for nobody in particular in the background of a dive bar. But it was enough to spark the interest of music fans in Lynn's storytelling and vocal prowess, which she's now putting to good use while recording her third full-length album. But before that comes along, Dallas listeners will get to see her up close at the Kessler Theater in Oak Cliff. In advance of the show in late September, we had a nice phone chat with Lara Lynn. We join the interview in progress. I wanna miss you, lonely as a desert sand. Sparkle like a star, stranger in a faraway land. Pockets tie his hands up, feet stuck right where he stands. Divide grows wide between work and the warmth of a man. One hand holds a pulse, the other a steering wheel. On one hand it is his curse, on the other it's what is real. Well, I've read a lot about how you landed the True Detective gig, so I won't ask you to repeat all of that, but I do want to talk about T-Bone Burnett, who is from this area. I'm in Dallas. He's from Fort Worth. So
that's right.
You mentioned that you had been sending your material to him before all of that happened. Did you want him to produce with you or co-write? Like, what drew you to him specifically as an artist?
Well, actually, I wasn't sending my stuff to him. My manager was. I think it might be a little more difficult to reach him than I would be capable of. But they had, you know, a previously established working relationship because she'd worked on Raising Sand with T-Bone.
Yeah.
And I think she thought that she didn't know how we would collaborate, but she just knew that we would hit it off creatively. So she's a genius. and we did, and T-Bone was great writing together. It was a very natural process. I mean, at one point he said that he doesn't do a ton of co-writing, and neither do I.
Yeah.
That was before we'd gotten started, so I was thinking, well, how the hell is this going to pan out? But he had a couple of things started that I took to my hotel room and fleshed out further and finished. And then I think at that point, it was just obvious that we're kind of in sync creatively. You know, we like the same thing and avoid the same thing.
How so? I mean, if you can kind of expound on that, like, is it a point of view? Is it a topics that you're frequently drawn to as artists, or?
I think it's more about delivery.
Yeah.
And minimalism.
Yeah.
In music, you know, I think we both hold those two things at utmost importance when writing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, his lyrics are a little more verbose than mine. And I think that is just because he's got a few years on me. I love his lyrics. They're so odd.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Paint very interesting visual pictures. Yeah.
Yeah. So I really liked working with him lyrically. His brain works in a different way.
You guys also worked with Roseanne Cash a little bit, but she and T-Bone, they both come off as really generous and kind and willing to collaborate with others in meaningful ways. Like, is there something weird or interesting about your experience with them that you remember when you look back on it, or, you know, how you all dug into creating the tunes together?
Well, I still haven't met Roseanne.
Oh, okay, so it was kind of a long distance deal.
Yeah, it was a long distance collaboration.
Wow, okay.
I guess that's the most weird thing I can think of about it. But I've also never written music to someone else's lyrics. That was the first experience for me. And it's, again, it's great. I mean, sometimes lyrics are the hardest part, you know.
You've talked about the experience of filming it, you know, how it was kind of comforting in a way because everyone there was inspired by the fact that music was there being played live. But now that you've seen the finished season, what was your impression of the story being told overall? I mean, it's stayed with me in really weird ways. Like, I'll just sometimes think about it like, you know, that's what it was about. Yeah.
Just popped up. You know, I think Nick obviously is a deep person.
Yeah.
I think he uses this forum to paint a big picture about love, really.
Yeah.
Love in its many forms and all of its sacrifices. Yeah. But that's really the takeaway for me. That's what resonates most. And like you said, I also just find myself randomly thinking about different themes and dialogue and why, you know. I mean, I think Vince Vaughn's best moment in the whole show is when he was having a chat with the kid outside.
Yeah. It's just like, that's the one I think about so often still. It's like TV does not stay with me in that way. It's so weird. And it's weird how that season was like, I got a mixed kind of review from the public, but I think in a way it stayed with me more than the first season.
Yeah, same for me. You know. It seems like it might be less accessible.
Yeah.
Second season might be less accessible, but that's usually the stuff that goes the deepest, you know, leaves the greatest marks.
Waking up is harder than it seems. Wandering through these empty rooms of dusty books and quiet dreams. Pictures on a mantle speak your name softly like forgotten tunes just outside the sound of pain.
Well, your character and the music you're playing in those scenes is like some of the loneliest, most solitary music I've heard in a long time. And there are aspects of your non-True Detective music that fit that description as well. I mean, some of it, and then some of it is different. But are you able to write from those kinds of moods within them, or do you have to get some perspective before you tackle them? I would imagine it's kind of hard.
You know, it's easiest for me to do that, actually.
Yeah.
When I sit down with a guitar, that's usually right where I go. I have to avoid it. I have to, you know, be pretty diligent about not playing that song. I mean, because there are other emotions, and I feel those too, of course.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And other people need to hear other things as well. You know, I think it's important as an artist, as an entertainer, as a musician, to take people on a journey, you know, and take them. I was about to go really deep in metaphor land, and I'm not going to do it. But you know, lay out the entire emotional. I can't think of the word. I'm sorry. I'm only half a cup deep in coffee.
Oh, man, yeah. I've had my two, so I'm probably kind of, like, intense for you right now, but that's all right.
No, it's good. It's good. It's rubbing off on me a little bit. Wake up! but, you know, I'm trying to say, basically, that it's important. You can't have the dark without the light. Everybody knows that. So I think that is important too, in music.
Yeah, and I find that
say hello to all things.
Yeah, I find that the sad songs help me when I'm sad, and they don't make it worse.
I just read a study, like I think 2 days ago, saying that sad music creates positive emotions.
Yeah.
Positive feelings.
It cries for you, I guess, in a way.
Yeah.
And you're coming to the Kessler in Dallas, which is you're going to love this room if you've never been in it. It's very...
I haven't. I'm so excited.
It's a listener's room. Like, people pay rapt attention to the artists there, and I think you'll really like it.
I better get my shit together.
But as you start to tour around this, the material from the show and then your older material, how do you combine those two, and what does the stage show look like when you do that?
Well, I'm touring with my full band.
Oh, great.
Which is great. They're all very sensitive musicians, so they can play. For instance, we'll be doing My Least Favorite Life, and typically I would say, oh, that just needs to be solo. But they can be so subtle that you almost don't even notice that they're there.
Oh, yeah.
We're doing everything from that to full-on, vault-out rock.
Great.
So it will be a very dynamic show.
This is my least favorite life. The one where you fly and I don't. A kiss holds a million deceits and a lifetime goes up in smoke. This is my least favorite eel, who floats far above earth and stone. The nights that I twist on the rack is the time.
Lyra Lynn will play at Oak Cliff's Kessler Theater on September 25th. Find out more about the show at thekessler.org and hear Lyra's music at Lyralynn, that's LeraLynn.com. And now for today's final segment, a sound collage of sorts featuring the voice and the music of 23-year-old Dallas rapper Byron Neal. He lives in the suburb of Mesquite, actually, and he goes by Lord Byron, yet he reveals in the comments you're about to hear that his stage name doesn't have too much to do with the romantic poet. Byron's latest album is called Digital Crucifixion, and like the artist himself, it can't be described in simple fashion. He's employing a variety of lyrical techniques over found sounds, glitchy beats, and even some live jazz instrumentation. While Byron's material isn't the most accessible on first listen, it rewards the ears with each successive one. On the other side of the music, we'll start with Byron talking about the live jazz musicians with whom he writes and collaborates. Here's Lord Byron.
Guess the beat flow, extra ego. Swear nobody better ever mess with me though. I swear nobody better ever mess with me though. I know young niggas pull shells and picos. GPA depleted when the roof is seated. I'm the gun and see some sharks eat it. Niggas think I'm just rapping till I park the beam. This is real, let's get like two pots spit. Hit your chick in the hip, she ain't no split. See, I talk something new when I talk a few better. So you better get a clue and recognize who matters. I'm like a statue. Granted nuts.
Yeah, man, they're jazz musicians, man. And they actually all went to Booker T. And The knowledge of music is just like out of this world, like, so yeah, I'm thankful for them for just like embracing me, and like they're my best friends now, so like
So are you riding with them around a lot, or are you still doing most of that like on your own and then they help you flesh it out a lot?
Nah, I'm riding around with them a lot, like like all of my I recorded my whole album with Ben, who's the guitarist, who's also a producer. Yeah, he actually produced some tracks on my album, and so I record all my music at his house, and so like, yeah, man, we're always together, we're always making other types of music, not just rap shit, just crazy shit.
Mics know my plight is the vanity. I'm gorgeous, but life is torturous. Where you gotta bump this with the force who forced us. Four horsemen all at the water. You can't make them drink nor pour it for them. Some use chloroform to force feed them. Some use chlorophyll to make life greener. If the flower never sprouts, was it ever born? Or just still born? I still feel form. Fill out the form. The devil had horns, so Jesus sported thorns. They even threw rocks like corn. Beat them with heavy metal like the tests on our arms. The lightsaber which Vader held was the lightsaber from death in which Anakin dwell. You live by the sword, you must die by yourself. You live for a whore, you must die yourself.
The theme of the album was basically like, it's digital crucifixion. It's being crucified for something you believe in. I believe in my artwork. I believe in the craft more than anything. So being crucified doesn't necessarily have to mean something deadly. It can mean like, you know,
being held up as an example.
Exactly. Or even like, oh, damn, like, this song isn't going to make it on the radio because it isn't this type of song, but I'm going to still put it out as a single because it's the future. Like,
sure.
That's also being crucified in a sense. It's any type of sacrifice that you make. And that's what I wanted to do. I just wanted to make a completely, totally different album that sounds like 5 years ahead of its time, because I want people to know that I don't care about being on the radio. I don't care about making an album like this guy made because this guy's album is big. Or I just gonna make something that sounds futuristic. And because it's better, like, it makes the world cooler.
Chess back again. When the dope gang died, it's back crack again. This is a new flow, new track again. That other flow was old, no backtrack gang. Don't go rack your brain trying to wrap it around the fact that I rap insane. I rap like your dame's weed. I rap like Christmas Eve. I rap like the end of scene. I'm a monster, I'm monstrous. I'm a monster, I'm monstrous. Yo, yo. I'm a monster, I'm monstrous. I'm a monster, I'm monstrous. Yo, yeah. I'm a monster, I'm monstrous. I'm a monster, I'm monstrous. Yo. Hey, even when I'm late, I'm right on time. You know I'm a nigga, I'm never on time. If the watch on my arm, then I own time. Hey, model chick like, bye, can I buy some time? Told her I got a sec if she got a dime. She said, Lord, bye, you been on my mind. Hey, nice to make
the acquaintance, but my time is money. So I'ma need that dime, honey. You don't need this shine, mommy. It's not good for your skin. Hey, and I'm not mean, but my chain is. And I'm far from a con like Genghis. Never aim at the aimless.
Yeah. We have the technology now where we can do multiple things and be great at multiple things. Like, people always like, be a master of one trade or whatever. It's like, no, like, yeah, that was something you could say like 30 years ago when we didn't have the technology to do many of things and be great at many of things. Now we do. Like, why not? Like, especially like me, I like art before I like rap. So like, why not, you know what I'm saying, incorporate art with the shit I do now, which is my rap shit. So it's like,
you can cripple the game from the things that you saying. Don't sing what you don't know. You bring the stain to your name. You won't attain fame by bringing on stream. Instead, you become the viewer aim before you can attain his claim. Diamonds imported, these rhymers, my orphans. Donate their organs to their father when it's time to post-mortem. I led squadrons, dodging my name, it's like dodging my reign. For 40 days and 40 nights, I had my way with the game. I had hoes who modeled for free, the Giannini and shit. Who ran Panera errands for the team, Panini's in the whip. All my doggies rock the new Yeezys, black designer supporters. Throw a quarter in the water for a late mortar. Blow herb like I'm Mother Nature. Look at the ants from the skyscraper. Like, how the hell could they not make it? We living in hell, sinning in hell, spinning in hell. At least bring heaven where you dwell.
I think mostly I deal with the frustration of maybe like other people not understanding my work as fast as I would want them to.
Yeah.
That may sound like egotistical, whatever, but I just have to feel like I am making the most different music that Dallas has, rap music at least, that Dallas has ever heard, like, in my opinion. And other people have told me this too, and I just feel like maybe I just need to relax a little bit more and let people catch up, because maybe they're just not used to what they're hearing, so it's kind of hard for them to catch up. But I think, I don't know, man, I haven't really dealt with struggles yet. I know, like, as far as, like, artistically, I know I will at some point, but I haven't felt the struggle of anything other than the frustration of that.
Ghost in the booth, I spit spirit through the wire. So when you hear it, you get near it and get higher. What's up, bro, bro? I heard you got it for the low-low. Let's exchange business cards to get extra dodo. Got sweets at the Omni to sleep. I'm from the east side of Dallas, but I live in Mesquite. Brisket burgers for my wifey's son. None slimming the cheeks. I cop chunk clock this, then we swim at the beach. Niggas thought the kid went missing. I'll be pimping, you can be Jordan. It doesn't matter, I'm a legend regardless. Heartless starter shooting threes for me. Don't contest, literally shoot threes. For me, I must confess, I'm not a street nigga at all. I understand the street laws and follow my whip color Diablo. With fall, my life's a view at the top of the reunion tower ball. Through the skyscraper glass, I see my only downfall. Shorty chewing when the fresh is about to go down.
I'm not really a poet. I guess you could call it poetry, or whatever. I'm just a rapper, man. But, and it's funny because I don't even like Lord Byron's poetry.
Yeah.
Like, it's just too mushy for me. And he's a good guy, but he was a good guy, but nah, man.
He's romantic.
Yeah, exactly.
Stuff. Even though the rapper doesn't identify with the poet whose name he's using as his own, his approach to music making and his admitted struggles bring to mind a Lord Byron poem called Solitude. It's about the difference between feeling peacefully by oneself in nature and tragically alone in a crowd. I'm hoping, as the interests of Dallas music scene continue to broaden in the internet age, that Byron the rapper won't feel that second kind of solitude. He's got too many valuable things to say for others not to hear him and appreciate him. Hear more of Lord Byron's music at bylrdby.bandcamp.com. That's it for this episode. The show is produced by myself with engineering assistance from Brian Elledge. Until next time, thanks for listening.